Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On today's podcast, some movie suggestions for you, a little bit of TV, and a whole lot of pop culture. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I think I'm ready to listen to The Smiths here on Big Squid. Thank you for joining me today. This podcast in the movie section is a podcast that I recorded a few weeks ago for my Patreon page. But a lot of people have been getting in touch with me and asking me in particular about The Killer. So I thought I would repackage it for all of you, and you can have a listen and let me know what you think about that. It's funny, the fans of the podcast are so good, they are scared to even kind of mention exactly what they're thinking about something in case I haven't watched it. And I love that. I love that about you. You get it, you know? You're tentative, you know? It's like, hey, have you watched this? I've got some thoughts. I liked it, but I don't want to say why. And I really appreciate that. So you'll be able to get on board with what I think about The Killer and other movies like Past Lives, a few older films that I managed to catch up with as well, and how bored I was in the latest Exorcist movies. Like, goodness gracious. Like, I've seen some good stuff this year, and that was not one of them. Ah, dear. But it happens. They can't all be winners, my friends. Before we get into the movie side of it, though, I just thought I'd give you a little rundown of TV shows that I'm watching at the moment. And TV was a bit slow for me for a while there. I finally got around to watching This Is Going to Hurt, and I loved it. I just thought it was so good. And Ben Whishaw is just remarkable in the lead role, especially playing someone who in many ways is unlikable and makes mistakes, but he infuses him with a humanity and an understanding that allows you to be frustrated with the foibles, but also understand them. And it means you don't check out from the character, I think, even though they can be awful at times and not display the best of intentions. But if you've never seen that before, I thoroughly recommend that. I think it's just wonderful. But recently, after going a little while without watching much TV, I still watch John Oliver. I think I'm done with Rick and Morty. It's just doesn't have the magic it used to have. Nothing to do with the new voices. I kind of was a bit checked out of it last year. And I don't know. There's been a shift in the paradigm in what I'm enjoying these days. And I can't honestly tell you if the episodes are better, worse, or whatever. I just honestly couldn't tell you. I just don't enjoy them as much. I'm flicking through my phone. I'm, you know, stopping halfway through a 20-odd minute episode to get a snack or go to the toilet. And, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? You can just be out on something. I don't know if it's the fandom of it. I just honestly have checked out and really don't care. So there's a few things in my life now that feel that way. I'm out on the Marvel films and TV shows. I haven't watched any of them in such a long time. I'm out on Star Wars, except for Andor. That is the only thing that I'm actually properly invested in. I'm looking forward to season two of that. But for the most part, Star Wars, I could just not give a shit. I really am mildly curious about what James Gunn is going to do with the DC Universe stuff. He seems to be referencing a lot of stuff that I loved when it first came out. But yeah, you know, that's when it first came out as well. I don't really read comics anymore. I do read things like Ice Cream Man from Image. I read all of the Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips productions. I finally finished volume 4 of Something is Killing the Children, which I'm still really enjoying. I read Daniel Klaus's latest graphic novel, Monica. Damn, like that was a work of art. But for the most part, I just don't bother reading any of that stuff anymore. And I kind of feel like I read Alan Moore's novella. You may have heard me talk about this before, but I read his novella about the comic book industry. And it's funny. It's like Alan Moore introduced me to a high level of enjoying comics, and then he's taken me out at the same time, which is funny considering the story that I'm reading out under the Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted banner of The Ultimate. But that was originally written 4 years ago, and it's been interesting to re-engage with it. I have ideas on where I might take this, but yeah, I'm just kind of out on all of these things. I've had no interest in the new Doctor Who specials. It's not an active disinterest. It's a literal disinterest. I just would prefer to read or watch something that I am guaranteed is going to be good. I've been slowly losing interest in the series for a while now. Like, even seasons that we've covered here, even if I've kind of enjoyed them, I'm not emotionally tethered to them. And yeah, it's just a, I don't know, maybe I'm just kind of done. You know, Russell T. Davies talking about how he's going to make a Hooniverse, and I'm like, really? Feels like that kind of approach to storytelling is cooked. If you look at like the DC stuff and the Marvel stuff and the failed, you know, attempts to make universes out of any IP, and now you're going to do it? Like I hope it's good. Like I don't bear it any ill will, but going back to David Tennant, it's not exciting to me. It just really isn't, you know? So I don't know. Maybe I'd be proven wrong at some point, but maybe that interest will come back. You know, maybe this is just a moment in time. I'm not declaring it is over and done forever, but, you know, why the fuck would I give a shit about stuff that's not made well when I can rewatch Past Lives? Past Lives is just ultimately better than anything than Marvel, DC, Doctor Who, any of these IPs have made in years. So I would just rather watch that than bore myself with, you know, variations on the same shit. Anyway, I don't mean to be a downer, but the four things I've been watching have been fun. I'll start with the one that I think is just fun. I'm not entirely certain it's the best thing on TV, but it's fun enough. And, you know, I've just been saying I'm done with DC, Marvel, Doctor Who, all of that stuff. But I've been watching Monarch, Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV, and I find it to be a bit of a lark. You know, and I guess that's because I don't really have any emotional investment in Godzilla or King Kong or any of those types of monster movies. But I kind of watched this because I like the idea of seeing Wyatt Russell and Kurt Russell playing the same character. And I quite like Wyatt Russell. And yeah, I think it's pretty inventive. Also, the comic book writer Matt Fraction, who I think is a real talent. I was curious to see what he was doing. So that to me is probably a notch down of the next three things I'm going to talk about. But yeah, I think it's just kind of fun, and it seems to not take itself too seriously. It's trying to do some interesting things with characters. I love Kurt Russell. There's just enough monster stuff for me to be, yep, that's kind of moving it along. Feels a little bit X-Files with, you know, big lizards and things that shoot things out of their faces and freeze you, and you have to run away from stuff. So, you know, maybe it'll be a one season thing for me, but at the moment it's been a nice palate cleanser of a TV show. The second thing I've been watching is season 4 of For All Mankind, which to me is hard science fiction and is still fantastic. The alternate history that they've created is compelling. It makes a lot of sense. I'm invested in all of the stories. I think one of the new characters, a worker on Mars, is I thought he's a fucking idiot from the moment I met him. And that has not changed, but I really like that about the character. He makes sense, you know, as someone that would be interested in following. I'm enjoying the politics that have presented themselves on Mars between the haves and the have-nots, which is interesting because, you know, the workers, some of the workers, you know, like the main worker who I find annoying, I'm kind of a little bit on his side because he is being screwed over by everyone who's making money. And some of the characters that I love who are, you know, up above them and making decent money and making decisions based on not really giving a shit about the poor people. Like, there's just a subtlety to it that, you know, it just complicates things and it makes it interesting. And that's not even before we get into the politics of what's going on Earth. Daniel Stern has been fantastic. He has been a complete and utter flog, and I've loved him as well. But, you know, seeing the girls get together and, you know, branch out from NASA, it's all been great. I just think it's so well done. And, you know, I think the plan is for 5 seasons, and that probably seems right. So hopefully they'll get to make this. Anyway, I've really enjoyed it. And if you know, the episodes are a bit long, you know, like they can be, some episodes are like 65, 70 minutes long. And, you know, I totally get that might be a bit daunting, but it's pretty enriching. And, yeah, no, I think it's great. My God, Margot over in Russia, definitely worthwhile checking out. So that's For All Mankind on season 4. Another one of the Apple TV shows that I just think is really well done, you know, like it's just, you know, they don't always hit, but I've enjoyed more of their stuff than I haven't. I'm still waiting for Pachinko to come back. I thought that was outstanding. You know, who knows? They may have taken too long with a new season of Severance, but, you know, maybe they'll come back with a flash, so that'd be good as well. The next TV show I wanted to talk to you about was season 5 of Fargo. Fargo has returned with a bang. I'm in the minority. I like season 3. I think the first 2 seasons are unassailable. I think season 3 is really good. I just think it's not as good as the first 2. Season 4 is a little bit hit and miss, but I still enjoyed it. Like, even if it was not quite there, I was completely fine to follow it through till the end, and it still had enough moments of brilliance for me to, you know, find myself in entranced in the story they were telling. But season 5 has really, really kicked off with some great stuff. And if you haven't been back to the Fargo universe or seen it before, Noah Hawley, who creates the show, has, you know, he kind of draws on parallels between Coen Brothers movies, and this one has a little bit of the original movie Fargo. It has a little bit of Hudsucker Proxy. It has a little bit of No Country for Old Men, but each idea is kind of flipped in a way. Juno Temple as Dot is magnificent. It's so good to see her outside of the Ted Lasso world, where I felt like she was completely and utterly misused in season three. So she's fantastic in the lead. And oh my goodness, like John Hamm as Roy Tillman is one of the most gross and awful, awful people we have seen on as a character on TV a long time. There's a touch when early in the second episode they do something with him physically, and if you haven't seen it, just keep an eye out for a specific detail while he's in the hot tub. And I just found it so gross and so perfect, and a really interesting summation of what his character is like. Only set in 2019, so rather than the past, it's like it's the recent past, and it really is talking about a divided America and the people who believe it should go in one direction as opposed to another. That is done subtly. There's no sermonizing, there's no characters smacking you over the head, explaining what's going on. It's there under the surface for you to find at your own pace. But the storytelling has been magnificent. Joe Keery from... what was Joe Keery on? He was on... just let me check this. I'm pretty certain he was in... Yes, Stranger Things, of course. Really good. Like magnificent. Once again, you see him... early, I think it's in episode 2, maybe episode 3, where he goes and visits someone in hospital, and something that he does while being tough is hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. You'll see him do it while he's being, you know, big tough guy, and it's so gross, and it really points out, hey, this guy's a flog. So Fargo is back. You can find that on the SBS app here in Australia, but wherever it is, I thoroughly recommend getting back into that. And then finally, Slow Horses is back. Slow Horses. It's just great. It's so good. I just think it is one of the best things on TV. I really loved the first season. I thought the second season was excellent. You know, it's just that first season was so good. But Gary Oldman as Jackson Lamb is just a joy and a treat. And he's gross as well, but he's so lovable while being a complete and utter dick, farting and burping, and he looks like he stinks. You know, wash your hair, Jackson Lamb, you disgusting rotter. But I love it. And Jack Loudon as River Cartwright is one of the funniest things on television. You know, it's essentially, he's the closest to the Bourne/Bond kind of character, but he's a bit useless and keeps making mistakes, even though he has the best of intentions. And that's, Jack Loudon's just really good at it. You know, I've been a fan of his since, since I first saw him in Dunkirk, and I love watching him in this. I just think he is fantastic. Just all of the characters are great. You know, Catherine Standish is like one of the best characters on television at the moment. You know, they're all kind of useless. It's compelling. Kristen Scott Thomas just comes in as Diana Taverner, and she's just pitching 100 miles per hour with every performance that she's in. It's just great. So, you know what? It sounds like I'm sponsored by Apple, and I'm not. I'm willing to be if you're listening, Apple. But yeah, I For All Mankind, Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, Slow Horses, they've all just been fantastic, and I've thoroughly enjoyed them. So they're my TV suggestions if you're looking for something at the moment. Let me know what you think. I would love to know where you're at with your TV viewing as well. All right, let's get to the movie part of the podcast, and then I'll just swing by at the end to say goodbye. So, as I said, this was originally produced for the Patreon only, but so many people were asking me about movies, I thought I would share it here with you. Here I am. I've been wanting to talk about all the movies I saw in October for you guys, and the thing was I saw that The Killer was coming out in early November, and I figured there'd be a bit of crossover with people who listen to this podcast who also like David Fincher's movies. So I thought I'd just give it a little bit of time, give some of you enough time to check it out. I'm going to try not talk too much about any of these films with spoilers, but, you know, if you don't really want to hear anything, you know, maybe best to avoid this podcast altogether until you have seen the film that you want to see. Look, we're going to cover, in this order, The Creator, The Exorcist Believer, How to Blow Up a Pipeline, Past Lives, Killers of the Flower Moon, Long Day's Journey Into Night, and The Killer. And maybe then finish with a little coda on seeing Oppenheimer in IMAX. But some of those films are not new releases. Some of them are a little bit older. But I thought they were all interesting. The ones that aren't new releases that I'm going to talk about, I really enjoyed. So that's why I want to bring them up. So that's the order we'll go in, so you can get a rough idea if there's a movie there that you still haven't seen and you don't want it ruined in any way, you can tune out just before that. So let's begin with The Creator. It was directed by Gareth Edwards and had the screenplay by Gareth Edwards and Chris Vietz, and from a story by Gareth Edwards. And it starred John David Washington, Gemma Chan, Ken Watanabe, and Allison Janney as well. So this is a film that is set in 2070. It's roughly about 15 years after a nuclear detonation in Los Angeles and a war against artificial intelligence. And we follow John David Washington, who is an ex-special forces agent who's recruited to hunt down and kill this mysterious weapon with the power to end the war, which is known as the Creator. So it's interesting to talk about this film. Visually, quite beautiful. I saw it at the cinema, and it looked fantastic, and it has a notoriously small budget of only $80 million, which is crazy because it looks so much better than some of the Marvel movies we've seen, as an example, in recent times, or even the DC movies that are like $200 or $250 million. This movie looked fantastic and was quite a visual treat. I thought John David Washington was excellent in the lead role. Allison Janney's always great. Gemma Chan, you know, I do like her in some things, but the last couple of things I've seen her in, this and Eternals, have kind of left me a little bit underwhelmed. But I don't think it's her fault. I just think both of these movies have not done her a proper service by giving her a strong enough character. But the thing is that this film, while looking beautiful and having quite exciting scenes, it didn't really hold up for me. It didn't really hold up as one tale. It felt like something I'd seen before. It felt like many things that I'd seen before in this, you know, sci-fi dystopian kind of future. And there's nothing really wrong with that. Sometimes watching something and feeling that you are across this style of storytelling or this particular genre, that's fine. It's just kind of what you do within that. And the world building is so well done, but the story just had some implausibilities within it that kept taking me out of the film. So it's not any of the AI stuff. It's not any of the science fiction future that they're exploring. None of that. There's just little parts of the film where you're wondering, hang on, how did we get from this scene to that scene? Now, both scenes look fantastic, but there's an illogic in the storytelling as to how this character could have gotten from here to there so easily. And I'm speaking obtusely because you might want to see it and you might not have a problem with that like I did. But it just happened enough times that I was sort of sitting there and it kept taking me out of the film. So, and the movie hasn't done as well as it could have done. It's 133 minutes. I don't know if it sustained 133 minutes. Sometimes I think in stories like this, they set up a premise like, how's our hero going to get from point A to point B? And then to make that happen, there's an implausibility as to how it occurs. And sometimes you just need to take that scene out. It doesn't matter. They got from here to there, and let's get to the good bits. This feels very much like when I first started writing stand-up comedy shows. There was always, early on in the productions I used to make, there used to be like a 2 to 5 minute part of the show that, maybe even 7 minutes, which is a long time, where you'd think, oh, I have to get to this bit, because this is the bit that the whole show hangs off. This is the whole bit that everything revolves around, and I've got to get through this, even though it's a bit dry. And then one day you forget to perform that bit because you're having a good time on stage, and you realize at the end you didn't miss it and nobody else did. So that's how I felt with some aspects of this story. The longer it goes, the more you feel like you've seen it before, and therefore the more you start to get a little bit bored. If you lopped off possibly 20 minutes of this film, then maybe it moves along, maybe not, yeah, 20 minutes, I reckon. Yeah, if you could get it down to 110 minutes, 105, 110 minutes, you wouldn't mind having aspects of it that seem like they're reflections of other films that you've seen before. But look, it's, relatively speaking for this kind of film, it's a smaller film, and I like the roll of the dice of it. But in the end, it just kind of left me a little bit cold. Maybe I'll watch it again at some point on streaming, but for the most part, I thought this was okay. I did go along with a friend and I bought the tickets, and it was like, geez, I think I just spent $70 on this film, and I'm not entirely certain it was worth $70. Maybe if I'd spent $30, I would have been a little bit more understanding about it. But, and look, you've heard me talk about movies in the past. I don't think a movie should be short in time or long in time. I think a movie should be as long as it's meant to be. That's why, personally, I find Oppenheimer to be the perfect time for that story. It's 3 hours, but everything pays off and it reflects, the ending reflects the beginning, and, it moves along at a rapid pace. And this is a movie that just kind of meandered a little bit. So anyway, probably worthwhile checking out if you're going to watch it on streaming, because, you can get a sandwich at some points and you'll be fine. All right. So that was The Creator. The Exorcist Believer. This is under the Blumhouse Productions team, who do a pretty good job of reinvigorating old films and, old storylines and updating them. They had a considerable success with Halloween. And from all the reports, they've spent quite a lot of money on The Exorcist as a new IP for them to dig into. But this was directed by David Gordon Green, who has had some success with horror movies in the past. He wrote the screenplay with Peter Sattler. And this was... I was really bored by this film. This is a movie that was 111 minutes, and that felt... that felt too long. This is a film about a young photographer called Victor, and he's in Haiti with his pregnant wife, who's blessed by a voodoo practitioner while on their honeymoon, and then a massive earthquake hits, and his wife is injured, mortally injured, and she asks her husband Victor to protect their unborn daughter, Angela. And when paramedics arrive, they can tell Victor he must choose to save either his wife or his child. And, of course, he has to make a choice, as you can well imagine. So 13 years later, Victor is, you know, he's raising his daughter and he's kind of lost his faith in God after his wife's death. And then one day after school, Angela and her Baptist best friend, Catherine, decide to perform a seance in an attempt to contact Angela's mother, and the girls go missing and a 3-day manhunt begins. They go looking for the two girls, and when they are found, they are traumatized. They seem relatively normal. They've got burns on their feet, and then, of course, the conditions worsen and yada, yada, yada. Guess who turns up? I'm not giving anything away, but this was just I don't really know what to say. I just thought it kind of read or watched like a SNL sketch, you know. It's like, you know, what would be better than one possession? How about two possessions? And it's just a little bit by the numbers. It's a little bit boring. This is also a world where it ties into the original Exorcist, where Chris McNeil, played by Ellen Burstyn, is a best-selling author who has talked about the possession with her daughter Regan, who she is now, you know, estranged from. And so, you know, there's scenes of possession where the two girls are saying stuff, and it's like, yeah, if you're buying into it being two possessed little girls, then why would you buy into anything that's being said? Does that make sense? Like, if you're in a world where you have a sense of what a possession could be, and then someone is possessed and they say things like, why would you get upset? You'd just go, oh, this is the this is the devil trying to, you know, trick me into doing something or reacting in a certain way. Look, I just thought this was not very good. The lead actor, Leslie Odom Jr., I thought he was really good, actually. I thought he did a really good job, but you know, it had Anne Dowd in it, who I love from The Leftovers, and she's kind of not really given a lot to do. And it's just a bit of a bummer seeing the character of Chris McNeil again. Like, after everything she goes through in The Exorcist, I'm just happy for that character to have a happy ending. And what happens in this film is just a bit of a bummer. So, like, this film, it was less than 2 hours, and I was this felt longer to me than some of the three and a half hour movies I've seen. So that tells you something. Anyway, I wasn't really a fan of The Exorcist, believer. So that was just one of those ones where it's like, I've seen it. And to be honest, this is the first time I've thought about it since I saw it, talking about it with you. So there you have it. All right. Now, the next film was a movie that came out originally at TIFF in 2022 and then released properly at the beginning of this year. I only just had an opportunity to see it, and that is a movie called How to Blow Up a Pipeline. It is directed by Daniel Goldabar and written by Ariella Barrera, Jordan Sciol, and Daniel as well. And it's based on the book by Andreas Malm, which is called How to Blow Up a Pipeline, Learning to Fight in a World on Fire, which is a non-fiction book. So this is a film that is set primarily in West Texas, and the film follows a fictional group of 8 young people who decide to blow up an oil pipeline at 2 key locations, and it explores the not only the extreme actions, but it questions the use of terrorism, and it brings up what it means morally to use these tools at your disposal when fighting the climate crisis. And, you know, it makes you question the use of property damage and sabotage as proper tactics as well. So I thought this was great. This is a thriller in many ways. You're following lots of different storylines. You're seeing the characters coming in at different points. You're following what is going to happen with their plan. I had no idea how this was going to end, and it was great. This is, you know, like an hour and 44 minutes. So, and, you know, take out the credits, like just under an hour 40. It's great. Moves along at a rapid pace. I watched this online and was so glad that I finally got to watch it. And, you know, it does leave you thinking about the political helplessness that we often feel when it comes to big issues in the world, whether it's climate crisis, which has been going on for a long time now, the fatigue that people seem to feel about the atrocities being committed in the Ukraine, the Middle East erupting again. It questions all of that. It brings up all of those feelings, and it makes you wonder, you know, what are you doing yourself? How are you engaging with the world? How do you feel about some of the things that these characters are doing? It's a really small budgeted film, and it was filmed in a pretty short time frame as well. And I think you can feel the energy in it. So I thought this was great and really worthwhile checking out. I could imagine some people finding it confronting or not agreeing with some of the methods that the characters use, but I think that's also part of the power of it. You don't really know exactly how you feel about certain things and certain actions. And I think that's important in the current climate. So How to Blow Up a Pipeline, as I said, saw it online.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thought it was great. Wish I'd seen it at the cinema when it came out, but I give that a hearty recommendation. After that, I saw one of my favourite films of the year. This is a film called Past Lives. It's, God, how would you describe it? It's a romantic drama, I guess. It's incredibly beautiful. It's directed by Celine Song, written by Celine Song. It stars Greta Lee, Tiao Yu, and John Magaro, and it is just stunning. What a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful film. It follows the relationship between two childhood friends who, over the course of 24 years, they contemplate their relationship when they grow apart and have these different lives. And it's The plot is semi-autobiographical and inspired by real events from Celine Song's life, which is also quite interesting. So you start off in Seoul, in South Korea, where Na Young and Hae Sung are 12-year-old classmates who develop an attraction for one another and go on a date set up by their parents. But shortly after this date, Na Young's family emigrates to Toronto, where she changes her name to Nora Moon, and like all young love, the two lose contact. And then 12 years later, Hae Sung has finished his military service. Nora has moved down to New York City. And one day, Nora discovers on Facebook that Hae Sung has commented on a post that he was looking for Na Young, unaware of her name change. And it's just beautiful. It is just a beautiful, beautiful film. It doesn't really go in the directions that you expect. Greta Lee is stunning as Nora. T.U. as Hae Sung is just as beautiful. It's, short. It's 106 minutes. I'm going to keep coming back to it. Look, who gives a shit about time-wise, but I know a lot of people are busy. This moves along at such a beautiful pace, and it honestly doesn't go in places that you expect. It's very loving to its two main characters. In a lesser film, things would have happened that ratchet up the drama, and this film ignores all of that. And it's I just adored it, and it will be one of those films that I will eventually at some point buy and put it alongside After Sun, and when I feel like I need to feel all the emotions, watch them back to back. So I just thought this was a stunner. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets nominated for some awards next year. I think it would be up for next year. Just a beautiful, beautiful film. If you haven't seen it and you feel like just experiencing some emotions in a safe place, which is sitting on your lounge, watching a movie, I just love this. As I said, that and After Sun are two of my favourites this year. So, please check that out. All right. Let's have a chat about Killers of the Flower Moon, the new Martin Scorsese movie written by Eric Roth and Scorsese, based on the book The Killers of the Flower Moon by David Gran. Obviously, you are across it. It's starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Lily Gladstone. This is a big film. Like, this is a really long film. I'm just going to give you a caveat before I talk about this film. The night that I saw this film, about 2 hours before I was about to meet up with Mark Humphreys and Richard Feidler and my mate Malk, I had been given a phone call from Cal Wilson's husband saying that the cancer that she had, so there'd been like a few weeks of wondering if things were going to be okay, and I had her husband ring me to tell me that it wasn't going to be okay, and that on that Tuesday, that was the day that I would go to the hospital and I would spend time with Cal and say goodbye to her. So that was all kind of running through my head before I saw this film, and I decided after I made a couple of quick phone calls that, well, there's nothing I can do, so I'm just going to catch up with my friends. It was kind of perfect in a way. I had company. I didn't have to talk about anything. It wasn't my place to talk about anything. And then I could just sit in the dark and watch a movie and, just have a moment of respite before the following day. And I really loved it. So it's set in the 1920s in Oklahoma, and it focuses on a series of murders of the Osage members and the relationships to the Osage Nation, which is all becomes incredibly dangerous because oil was discovered on their tribal land, and the tribal members had retained their rights on their reservation. And then, of course, you know, there's opportunists who come down and seek to get in on the action and get a part of the wealth. And I thought this was pretty powerful. I thought it moved along at quite a pace. The reason I give you the caveat of where my head was at, I was extremely focused on this film. So I'm sure other people may have seen this movie and thought it could have lost some time, or maybe it was a bit too long, but I was locked in. I think it's one of my favourite DiCaprio performances. I think it's one of my favourite De Niro performances. And Lily Gladstone, who I knew more from Reservation Dogs, she is stunning in this film. Like, she is out of control powerful. And anytime she's on the screen, I couldn't take my eyes off her. And she did it with a calmness and a softness. Like, it's not histrionics of her performing, it's her being quite contained. I think it's interesting reading some of the criticisms of the film, especially from the Assange, who say it's their story. Why are we looking at this story through the eyes of DiCaprio's character and through De Niro's character? I don't want to give too much away, and I don't think they are incorrect criticisms by any means. I think from my perspective, to get these kinds of stories out, I think Scorsese has done an excellent job in getting a story like this, a big story. It gets a lot of press, doesn't it? And I think he has handled it with care. I kind of understand why he's come at it from the angle that he has. Not because, and this is only my interpretation, not because I think he's being dismissive of the Assange, but I think where the movie ends, and it ends like on a pretty big swing, like the last 10 to 15 minutes of the film, it feels like it's making a statement about the current world that we live in as well. I think it's making a statement on the people, or not the people, but a society that really gets off on true crime podcasts and the way we view the world, and sometimes terrible things happening can be viewed as entertainment. And I think he's potentially challenging that assumption with his own work, maybe even agreeing to a certain extent. And you know, once you have that responsibility, how do you make that still work with a level of grace and being intellectually and emotionally balanced in the telling of your story? So I think if members of the Assange community wanted to make a version of this story through their own eyes, I think that would be incredibly valid. And I think, you know, one of the great things about specifically a TV series like Reservation Dogs, you saw all this beautiful talent that's coming through and getting an opportunity to make stuff. So while I completely understand the criticisms, I think Scorsese has done it in a way that is completely empathetic and probably correct in the way he's come through in telling this story. Does that make sense? Like, it's like, it is tricky, you know. It isn't anyone else's story to tell but theirs. But also, if Scorsese can get this story made and he makes it with affection and empathy, then isn't that inherently a good thing moving forward, as long as we kind of build on it and then give people of the Assange Nation an opportunity to tell their own stories as well? Like, it feels like an important stepping stone. Look, I thought it was great. It looks beautiful. Jesse Plemons turns up in it, and everything's better with Jesse Plemons. John Lithgow's great. Brendan Fraser, he comes in hot. But, you know, maybe that was the character in the end. I don't think this shows any of the Caucasian people in a particularly positive light. I think there's a subtlety to it that sometimes has been missed in the criticisms. I think DiCaprio kind of, right towards the end, in his final scene with Gladstone, I think there is an exchange that is telling. And I think if you're paying attention to that exchange, I think that really damns his character. But anyway, look, I thought it was great. You know, it is a long film. I saw it at a pretty stressful moment in my life, and it gave me something to focus on. So, you know, maybe you should take that into account when giving this a go. But it'll be on Apple TV soon. So maybe if you're weak of bladder, maybe that is the place to see it. All right. Two more films to discuss with you. This film is from 2018, and it was on, I think it's still there, on the SBS app, if this appeals to you. This is a film called A Long Day's Journey Into Night. And this was just a fascinating film. Directed and written by Gan. And it stars Tang Wei and Huang Zhu. And it opens with the character that Huang Zhu plays, Luo, who talks about being haunted by the memory of a woman who disappeared. And the story of his involvement with that woman is then told in a kind of non-linear, out-of-order series of scenes. And it is really tricky to describe this film. Like, it's really tricky. It feels, in some ways, quite dreamy. And it's, you know, it's essentially about a man who goes back to the city that he was in and recalls the summer he's spent with this woman that he found the tracks of her life 20 years before. And it's got this really interesting aspect to it where the first half of it is essentially all these different scenes. You know, Luo is connected to an organized crime as a casino manager. He's you know, looking for one who had been a cat burglar, that's Tang Wai's character, and had broken into a home with another woman. But they were distracted by a book with a poetry spell that could make the entire house itself spin. You know, it's quite surreal in many ways. And anyway, it's got this interconnected storyline that is told in this haphazard kind of way. And then the last hour of the film, and you know, I couldn't do this because it wasn't set up like this on my TV, but if you saw it in the cinema, you'd put on your 3D glasses, and the characters in the movie put on 3D glasses, and then that's a signal for you to put on yours. And then the final scene is like a continuous hour of the main character finding himself on a railway track and, you know, being taken up to a small office where he asks a boy for some help, and he has to play ping pong against this young boy to get the opportunity to get this help that he needs. And anyway, I don't know if it's a dream. I don't know if it was reality. I wonder if, you know, this is a story about memory. This is kind of my interpretation of it. It's a story about memory and how memories don't really align and they don't really come together to tell a coherent storyline, but there's a vibe to it and there's a feeling to it. And then this film definitely has a feeling all the way through that makes you feel complicit in the action that's taking place on the screen. I found it absolutely fascinating. And I think it's a I think it's a challenging film, you know. Like I honestly cannot say you should definitely watch this. I think if you want something that is challenging, something that is dreamlike, something that is more like a, I don't know, more like a Chinese David Lynch film, and you're up for getting to the end and having an initial reaction of, what? I think this is a really good film to check out. But if you don't have any of that in you at the moment, if you don't have any of that desire to engage with a film that asks so much of you, then maybe you should maybe you should give this one a miss. But I thought it was quite stunning, and I can't wait to rewatch it, knowing that I've seen it once now and I have a feel for it, and seeing what secrets it tells me the next time I check it out. But anyway, that is Long Day's Journey Into Night. I don't know if I've really helped you stand one way or another on this film, but once again, it's stunning, and I reckon it's worthwhile rolling the dice. The last main film I want to talk to you about is The Killer by David Fincher, screenplay by Andrew Kevin Walker, who, of course, wrote Seven. Stars Michael Fassbender, Arliss Howard, Charles Parnell, and has a crazy good sequence with Tilda Swinton. Now, this is a movie about an unnamed assassin. He's only credited as the killer, and he's staking out a Parisian hotel room, and this is all from his perspective. So you're inside his head, you're hearing his mantra, you're hearing his inner monologue, and at some point, you know what, if you haven't seen it, I don't even really want to give away the first twist. Hang on, let me have a drink of water and have a think. Nah, I don't want to say it. I really don't want to say it. So I'm going to speak very broadly about this film. This is a movie about someone who lives a life to a set of rules and expresses themselves in a certain way and has a mantra that they never contradict. But all the actions contradict it. And even the mantras, after a while, seem to be a little bit basic, and you start to wonder if this person who's been set up to be very good at their job, like, maybe they're not, and maybe they don't realize it. Maybe they're pretty good, but maybe they're not infallible like they believe that they are. Now, the very interesting thing about this film, by the way, it also has a stunning score by, of course, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. So I read a lot of reviews of this film, like a lot. And I read good ones and bad ones, because I was sitting in the cinema watching this with my mate, and 30 minutes in, I kind of turned around to her and said, am I the only one laughing in the cinema? She said, no, it's all right. Everyone's laughing. I said, oh, good, because I found it really funny. And all the reviews I've read, good and bad, the one thing that they have in common, if you put good and bad reviews alongside each other, the Venn diagram would be right in the middle. If you found the movie funny, you loved it. And if you didn't find the movie funny, you thought it was bullshit. And that seems to be, like, I'm not saying it's definitively like that for everyone, but every review I read, that's kind of the take on it. I think it's really funny. I think it's not funny as in jokes. It's funny like the Sofia Coppola film Somewhere. You know, in that film, there were just long scenes and then suddenly something would happen and you'd realize, oh, everything you thought about that character was suddenly contradicted by their actions. And this is the same thing. He's got this inner monologue that tells you exactly who he is, but everything he does doesn't quite seem to add up. And over the course of the film, you do wonder, is he growing as a person? Is he learning anything? Is he potentially just not very good at his job, but good enough to get other things done? Like, I just thought it was great. And we all know that David Fincher is a perfectionist. You know, well, there's all those stories about him doing, you know, hundreds of takes of scenes to get it just right. I kind of wonder if he's kind of making fun of himself as well. This person who's very definitive in his actions and the way that he carries himself. And, you know, chaos still ensues around him. All the actors in it, when they appear, are great. Tilda Swinton, knocking it out of the park. The movie set into six chapters, and I thought it moved along at an incredible rate. I think it looks stunning, and I've watched it twice now. I saw it at the cinema, and I've watched it on Netflix, and both times I've walked away from it having a pretty good time, and I felt like I got more out of it, more so the second time. First time I was too busy panicking that I was laughing in a film like, you know, what's the film in The Naked Gun that Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley are laughing at? Like Platoon, when they come out of the cinema and they've been laughing in Platoon. You know, there was a part of me that was like, oh my God, am I having my Naked Gun moment? But look, if you watch it and you don't find it funny, that's completely fine. I think the humor is black. I think it's very specific. And if you don't find it funny and you don't get into it, that is 100% fine. But if you do find it funny, I think you'll have a really good time with it. And that's like, even now I'm thinking of specific scenes of him talking to himself about, you know, hey, I'm going to do this and this way, and this is how things work. And then, oh, hang on, it didn't play out like that at all. Like when I've seen criticisms of the inner monologue as being, you know, lacking something, I feel like saying to them, yeah, yeah, there's a reason for that. But if you don't find that funny, then, you know, that's 100% fine, right? It's just not your sense of humor. I found it funny. I thought it was great. I had a really good time with it. So, you know, roll the dice, I reckon, and let me know how you feel about that. Finally, I had the pleasure of finally getting to the IMAX Centre that has reopened up here in Sydney. I think it's the best IMAX screen I have seen. And I turned on the Melbourne one. The last three times I went to the Melbourne IMAX, twice the movie broke down. Once it broke down, the second time the sound just disappeared, and the third time they started playing the trailer to the film while the film was playing. So you had image over image, and they are expensive tickets, and I do not mind paying money for an experience, but you need to be better. So I went to the Sydney IMAX. I went and saw Oppenheimer and Interstellar and Dunkirk, and I felt like I had you know, some brand new experiences with Oppenheimer, actually. It was great seeing it on such a big screen, and, you know, the scenes that are confronting are like they're almost harder to comprehend on a screen that are so big. Once again, I still think the movie moves at a rapid pace, and you know, I've seen the film a few times now, and I think the IMAX experience was possibly my favorite. seeing Dunkirk on that big screen as well. I've seen Interstellar heaps. Yeah, I think you know in the past that I've said that Interstellar is my favourite Nolan film, and I think Dunkirk is his best. But we're going to do a podcast soon. When Oppenheimer and Barbie and all of those movies came out, I realised that I just did not want to be a part of the noisy discourse online giving my opinions about those films. I just wanted to go and enjoy them. And so it probably seems counterintuitive that I wasn't doing podcasts talking about these films immediately. I think I've walked out of films and given them better reviews because I was full of the adrenaline, and I've given some movies worse reviews because of I haven't given them time to sit. So I was looking forward to Oppenheimer, and I just wanted to make sure that I gave it the correct amount of time to sit in my head. I'm not interested in hot takes, not in this way, not in stuff that I'm looking forward to seeing. So the movie is released on Blu-ray pretty soon. It's sometime next week, and I'm going to have a guest on. We're going to break down the film and then do our latest Christopher Nolan power rankings. There'll be some changes on my behalf. There's going to be some changes. Let me tell you that. But if you live in Sydney and you see that Oppenheimer is at IMAX, even if you have seen it elsewhere, I would recommend going and checking that out. And Dunkirk, by the way. Like, Interstellar goes without saying, but far out. I felt like Dunkirk was a whole new experience as well. I'm waiting for them to put Tenet up. I love Tenet. I think Tenet's great. I think Tenet is a spy movie that you dreamed about seeing once. And the more I watch it, the more I enjoy it. Maybe we could have the protagonist and the killer meet up in a movie where nobody gets a proper name as a credit. But anyway, they're the movies that I've seen in the last month. It's been a stressful month for a number of reasons, mainly everything that was happening with dear Carl Wilson. But of the films, The Creator, The Exorcist Believer, How to Blow Up a Pipeline, Past Lives, Killers of the Flower Moon, Long Day's Journey into Night, The Killer and Oppenheimer, you know, I would 100% suggest Oppenheimer, The Killer, and Past Lives are three films that you should definitely see. The Killer, you know, it's a roll of the dice on your how you feel sense of humor-wise. You know what? Let's throw in How to Blow Up a Pipeline there as well. Killers of the Flower Moon, I loved it, but it is a long film, and I think you really... I need to watch that one again. Because I watched it under extreme circumstances, and I need to work out if maybe I was just super focused because of everything that was going on, and maybe if I rewatch it, I find that it lags somewhere. But if you get to see it at the cinema, it's so beautiful. It's a really beautiful film to look at, and so I would recommend that. And The Creator, I'd check it out online, and The Exorcist Believer, I reckon you're fine. I just reckon you don't need to see that. I would suggest Long Day's Journey into Night, which is challenging and might leave you scratching your head, is a worthy challenge. And The Exorcist Believer is just, I don't know, a bit of a bummer. There you go. Harsh criticism from Hammo. A bit of a bummer. All right. Thank you to me for recording that earlier. I hope you got a lot out of that. A lot of TV, a lot of movies recently. Last night I just actually, you know, because I've been enjoying Fargo, I rewatched Barton Fink. Whew, Barton Fink really holds up as well. It's what a grimy, grotty film. So there'll be more to talk about soon. I'm going to do a proper breakdown on Oppenheimer, and I want to do it like properly. I'm hoping to get it done before the end of the year. If not, that'll come in January. I deliberately avoided it in when it first came out because everyone's so keen to have their thoughts and share them. And I was looking forward to that film. And I was looking forward to Barbie as well. And I just had no interest in being part of the discourse. Just none whatsoever. Who gives a shit? I wanted to sit with it. I wanted to enjoy it. I didn't listen to anything anyone had to say about these films. And, I genuinely believe that Oppenheimer is Nolan's masterpiece. I think it's fantastic, and it's a hard film to get your head around because it's bombastic. It's not a biopic; it's a thriller, but it's telling a real story. There's a lot to unpack with this movie, and I wanted to sit with it properly. I just wanted to enjoy it to begin with, and then I'm going to break it down for you and draw parallels not only within the story but to Nolan's oeuvre as well. So I'm looking forward to getting an opportunity to do that. I will hopefully get that done before I go on a brief sojourn back to Adelaide. Actually, for anyone in Adelaide, I will be making an appearance at the final Rhino Room show on the 15th of December. So if you're about, please come along and say hello afterwards and let me know what you've enjoyed this year. The Ultimate will be continuing. We're up at the last run of chapters. I had so much great feedback on this, and I've really appreciated it. This last run, I'm going to do at a chapter at a time. So, I'm really, in those first two thirds building it up, and now that it's got this end momentum, I want to kind of bang them out week to week, and hopefully you enjoy it the same way that you enjoy watching a TV series or whatever. So thank you for all the emails about it, and I'm enjoying the theories. The theories in particular are great, and some of you are close, some of you are not. Some of you have said things that I've thought, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that was in there. So it's like I'm learning as well. So thank you for everyone who's written to me about it. If you haven't started it, it's there for you whenever you want. And it's essentially a love letter to Melbourne. It's about a rock and roller called Robert, who was in a band called Dead Fingers Tapping in the 90s. The band broke up. He's been pretty depressed about something for quite a while, and he has retreated by hiding in his house with his cat, Alfred, and also he has been a part investor in his high school friend's comic book shop. And so he kind of goes and hangs out there, but he's a bit of a mess, and he keeps having these dreams, these apocalyptic superhero dreams, and suddenly he comes face to face with someone who claims that they're from another universe. Anyway, it's fun. It's, as I said, it's a love letter to Melbourne. It's got heaps of jokes. Robert's hopefully a delightful mess and has a fun set of supporting characters. And it's a story about identity, essentially, and the stories that we tell ourselves. So if you feel like giving it a go, if you've been a bit uncertain as to what it was, but now you think, maybe I'd like to give that a shot, it's there. It's going to be about 32 chapters all up, and you can read up until about chapter 24. It's three chapters at a time, so you can just kind of listen to it at your own pace. So if you haven't checked it out, I hope you enjoy it. And for those of you who have been listening all the way through, I hope you enjoy the finale that will be coming your way in the next few weeks. All right. I'll let you go now. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed these recommendations and not too much negativity in there. For the most part, that's a lot of stuff that I've loved. So if you've seen that stuff, let me know via Facebook, or you can contact me via Instagram, you know, all the usual places, and let me know if you enjoyed those things as well. All right, take care of yourself. I hope you're doing okay. We're right at the end of the year. It's been a big year, hasn't it? Been a lot going on. I'm ready to check out for a little while. And I hope you're good. And I hope you've got some relaxing time up ahead. Until then.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.